smash that record button. Of course, I smashed the record button as I was saying I was smashing the record button. So you actually didn't get the clip of me saying I was smashing the record button.
But now I have that long explanation that I can run in with it. So that works out.
Yeah. It'll just start with this machine.
Exactly. Like that. Yeah, we'll make it work. Yeah. Something that I was thinking about, talking about like introduction kind of stuff. So my girlfriend and I have been watching, kind of running through a couple different TV shows recently, ever since we got back from our weekend at the cabin. And one of the shows that we watched that we actually started, I think it was the Saturday night that we were up there, the last night that we were there, is The Bear on Hulu.
I've heard about that. I haven't seen any of it, but I've heard about it.
So it stars Jeremy Allen White, and it's essentially you're following him as he is trying to bring back to life this restaurant that his brother owned, but for reasons that come to be explained, his brother never let him work at the restaurant until after his untimely demise. So it definitely seems to take everything that you think about working in a restaurant, especially in the back end with cooking and everything, and just bring it to the screen, because it is beyond chaotic. And it's such, like, the first episode, it's been on my list for a little while, and the first episode, I'm like, all right, let's give this a try, because we had just finished watching all 14 seasons of Archer that we had fallen in love with. So my girlfriend and I are like, yeah, let's just try it, see what happens. I came recommended from my girlfriend's parents as well. And so the first episode was such a whirlwind of emotion and just like, what the hell did we just watch? Because you're thrown into it.
Yeah.
The first like 6 or 7 episodes of that first season is just like a lot of chaos. It's a lot of like building up to everything.
Yeah.
And in about 5 days, we watched both seasons, about 18 episodes total, an hour long each. So we ran through it like mad. And definitely recommend anyone listening to who hasn't previously watched it to check it out, because a third season is coming in June, I believe. All this to say, too, that what I found really interesting about it is that there's no like introduction to the show. Like, there's no, normally with TV shows or even with podcasts, that kind of thing, like how we do, we have the This Is Creative Banter and blah, 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 to kind of like ease you into it. Or some shows will play a little like 2 minute long clip and then go into their introduction of, hey, this is the show that you're watching in case you didn't know. This didn't have any of that. It just threw you in until I think it was the 7th episode of the first season that it finally had like a, you're watching The Bear kind of introduction. And I was reading about like why they did this, and I believe it was the director that was like, well, the first 6 episodes in his mind were kind of like a prologue to everything. Like, we're just starting to, because it's not completely linear. It's linear, but it's not like day to day, hour to hour kind of, you know what I mean? It's more like, here's one day and here's a snippet of what happens throughout this day, and cut to black and another snippet. And then the next episode is a totally different day, and it could have been like a week or two passed by, or just a couple of days. Pretty much the whole show goes on like that. But I found it really interesting how the director came to that, where it's like, okay, the 7th episode is kind of like the start of the show, really, like as you see it. But even with that, I just thought, well, the first 6 episodes, like, you didn't need the introduction at all. Even after that, you didn't need the introduction.
Yeah.
The more that you think about it, like, how many shows actually need to have any introduction to them at all? Especially today, on days of like, in terms of streaming and everything, you know
exactly
what you're watching.
You're going out of your way to make that selection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which has me thinking too, with our podcast here, like, as much as nice as it can be sometimes to make those introductions and those little paragraphs that I write up or whatever they end up being, I'm kind of thinking I might change it up and just not have an introduction. Just go straight into it. Because, like you said, you know what you're listening to when you click on it. Like, you know that this is Creative Banter. And I'm not telling you anything, like, super necessary in the beginning that will change your perceptions on whether you listen or not.
Yeah.
I don't think. It's not like I'm going to give you a full synopsis of what we talk about and then have you listen to the episode because, well, then what's the point of listening to the episode?
Yeah.
So it was interesting to kind of think about that. But then we just finished last night watching Fallout, which is Amazon's latest TV show that is adapted from the video games.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the promos for that, but I haven't seen that one yet.
Again, a fantastic, fantastic show.
Yeah.
Truly deserves all the praise that it's getting. And you know it's good when you have a fandom that really has no complaints over it, that has existed for the past, 30 years, something like that?
Yeah.
Since the games came out, I think the first one came out in 97. So, again, fantastic. But that has a little introduction to it. And then what I think is cool with that, though, is that at the very end of it, it has like the kind of like just a couple minutes of music with some credits, and it shows more of the world around it, kind of like in a video game-esque stylized art kind of deal. Like, that makes sense to me to have something bigger like that at the end, because that's just a little extra on top. That's like the cherry on top. Like, if you're really into it, you can watch through the last 2 minutes or whatever of where they're doing that before the true credits roll. But that's kind of, again, talking in parallel with this, like how we have your outro running at the end of the episode. I'm always thinking about how I can keep adapting this and all the other different things that I'm doing. And I think that's one of the things that I'm going to try, just see how it goes.
I think it'd be interesting to experiment. I will say, though, that I think there's something about the intros where you do a really good job tying together all the completely random things that we talk about in a way that it makes, at least to my mind, like when we record these, I mean, I've got some list of things I write down, just observations of the week. I know that you have some observations and some other topics and stuff. And if I were to try to look at this list, I've got like 5 things written down here. If I look at them, there's not a common thread between them. It's just like random, every single, different direction it goes. But somehow it all weaves together. And I think especially with the intros, because like if I listen back to an episode, like I was listening to the one that went live today, this morning when I was walking the dog, just to see if I made sense as I was talking. And when I listen to the intros, I'm like, oh, wow, it sounds like we actually have like, it sounds like we know what we're talking about. It sounds like there's a direction to this, when in reality, it's just blabbering about random things. So I really do appreciate the intros from that, though. I also do realize it takes a fair amount of effort to, I mean, you'll have to like listen to the episode, figure out what it is we talked about, find some way, and then, put it together in that way. So I think people do appreciate it, though. I think it'd be interesting to experiment a bit.
I think the biggest thing with it, and why I kind of want to try getting rid of them, is because, like you said, it takes a bit of effort to make that happen. It's not like it's different when you're interviewing someone and you can kind of give like, hey, here's like, you want that introduction. You want to know what you talk about in that. But with something like this, where it's so conversational, it can be really difficult to try and figure out, like you said, a comprehensive way to thread the needle through every little thing that we're talking about through here. And so I know for a fact that that's what it causes a lot of hangups when it comes to editing these episodes too.
Yeah.
And getting them out, because I'm like, I'll sit there and I'll just stare at, I have a running note on my laptop here on my Apple Notes. Mm-hmm. And it's for each one of the episodes, and I'll start off a new one, EP for this one, 96. And I'll just stare at that blinking cursor.
Yeah.
I'll just stare. And I'm like, how can I
make this work?
How can I write this in a way that isn't going to say, in this week, we talked about this and we had a conversation around, because I find myself repeating these same exact words over and over again. and it just drives me crazy. But I think the one kind of introduction that if I was doing like interviews more so than conversation based like mm-hmm. this is, I really like how Mark Maron on his podcast does his introductions, where I don't know if you've ever listened to his.
I haven't, no.
Really interesting interviewer. He is a comedian as well. And he did, I really love the, thinking back to it, I really love the interviews that he did with Steven Yeun and with Andrew Garfield. Just kind of going into more of the personal side of interview questions and still maintaining a conversation-based platform.
Yeah.
And what he does in the introductions is more of like, okay, we're going to get to the interview with X, but before we get to that, let's talk about the kind of shit that's been happening in my life.
Like, yeah.
Just going to give you a 5-minute overview of since the last time that you heard of me, let's have a conversation where I'm talking to you about what happened recently to me and the crazy stories and that kind of thing that I have to share. That's the kind of introduction that I really like, because yeah. it's not so much an introduction to the podcast itself, but it's just expanding on the world building or so that you're doing. Like I said, I think I'm going to give it a try and just see what happens. And I mean, who knows? Maybe I'll go back to it.
And I think the main thing is to have the consistency through the episodes. I think that's one of the things people appreciate. And also there's something about the having like the music play at the beginning and then fade into it or whatever it is. Cause there's a bit of nostalgia with that. Like if you think back to sitcoms from like the, I don't know, 70s, 80s into the 90s, where, you know, as you're talking about earlier, having that intro to it where that, you know, a little bit cheesy now, but there's something very nostalgic about that. And yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with the music and stuff. Like, right now, my wife and I, we're rewatching Star Trek Voyager.
Okay.
Which is our favorite from that. And there's always the, you know, skip intro button. And I'm like, mm-hmm. who hits that?
My girlfriend all the time. It gets really bad because, like I said, we were watching Archer for, I always hate that too. Like, you get into it, you start watching a show that you're like, oh, your partner, whoever, isn't going to really care for this. And then they even say like, yeah, I'm not really interested. Like, whatever. You can watch it by yourself. And then they come home from work and you're watching like halfway through an episode and they just get sucked into it. And they're like, I want to watch this now. And now you can't watch it alone because you have to watch the rest of it with her.
Yeah.
That happened to me with Archer. Like 3 episodes in, she comes home and I'm watching it. And she just stopped doing what she was doing because she got so engrossed with it. And she's like, I want to keep watching like 14 seasons later.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of times where I'm like, there were times where it was weird where you couldn't skip the intro. So you were kind of forced to watch it. Even other times when you could skip it, I wouldn't always click it because I don't know. I appreciate watching, even if it's the same thing, but the amount of time and effort that goes into them, but especially when they start to change them around and they add in little different things here and there just to keep it interesting.
Yeah,
I definitely see that nostalgia aspect, the joy of listening to that stuff. But there are also times where, like I'll also listen to Tim Ferriss every so often with his interviews and or Rich Roll, and I skip through the first like 5 or 6 minutes of that because I don't want to listen to the introductions, and I think a lot of that also plays because of how many ads are played. Or how many ads you have to get through too.
That's certainly a huge part of it. Yeah.
Our minute that we have of introduction before music rolls and then we go into conversation isn't nearly as bad as the 5 minutes or so, but still, I don't know.
So something that has been in, I heard about it on the radio a little while back and played with it. Have you seen this song AI generator, Udio? Have you played with that? Have you seen that yet?
I haven't heard of it. The only one that I heard of
it's audio without an A, so Udio.
Okay. Yeah, the only thing that I heard of recently with AI was the video one that they is causing waves or whatever, but that's also not something that I really keep up with because gross.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll say of all the stuff that's been out there, it started with the ChatGPT, then there was the image creation, the video creation, now the songs. I had never really played with any of them. To me, it's just not something that interests me. But I played with this one just because I was curious. I heard some songs that they did on the radio with it, and there's no real surprises. You plug in a few words to describe it, and then it generates a song in whatever style of music you select or it auto selects. Okay. And it takes, I don't know, maybe 20 seconds or so, and then it spits out a 33-second song. And I don't know. It's weird because I see it as a bit of a preview in a way to so much more of what's to come for that. So as an example, and these songs that it generates, there's vocals in there, there's lyrics, there's instruments and stuff. And there's definitely the uncanny valley thing where you can tell it's not quite human.
Yeah.
And that certainly will get better with time, but there's still just this, it's not very personal. And it's something that you see with so much of the AI stuff where you can tell it takes a little while to get used to it, but then once you learn to recognize an AI image or an AI video, you start to see the telltale signs that it's not made by a person. But when I do my videos, just thinking about the context of music, when I do my videos, I license all the music through a company, premiumbeat.com. And there's one artist in particular. It goes under the name El Rey Music. I use that artist for pretty much all the music I've used in the past, I don't know, 5-6 years.
Okay.
And the amount of music that this person churns out is impressive. Every time I log in, if I'm doing another video series, I look to see what the new stuff is and listen to it and maybe download a few as previews and then purchase the actual music. But I was just thinking about how for that sort of thing, the music just without any lyrics or anything, that will certainly very much fall victim to AI.
Oh, yeah.
As just a background wallpapery kind of music.
Elevator music, and essentially. It'll be taken over by AI entirely, because what's the point of licensing out music for your elevator, for your company, whatever,
yeah,
if you can just have Udio make it for you for free, and there you go. You don't have to worry about anything because you made it. You technically own it as far as copyright law goes right now. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and it really got me thinking a bit about how this is going to impact, because just seeing that firsthand of thinking, all right, well, you know, the company that I use for music, maybe at some point they won't be around. Maybe that artist will find that his job has been replaced by AI. But then there's other career paths, other creative type endeavors where it would be very difficult for AI to have an impact. But what I was thinking about is that for, I think, those that are going to be threatened by AI in terms of their livelihood, I feel like it's going to be more so the people that are trying to cater to the masses, to game the system a bit, to try to have the viral videos, to get the YouTube views, all that sort of stuff, where the larger the audience that you're trying to cater to, the less personal it is in a way. And the greater the chance that AI can do what you're doing. But it's when you have these smaller niche sort of areas that it would be very difficult to be replaced by AI. So it got me thinking a bit about that. I mean, at some point, are we not going to see the influencer thing being as much of a thing anymore? Because that could so easily be done just by AI. Just have the, quote, AI influencers. And people would never know.
I mean, there already are.
There's not.
Like,
exactly.
They already exist, and they're already making bank for the small companies or whatever that are putting them out there. So,
yeah.
I think.
Because it could do things on a massive scale way faster than a person.
And way cheaper.
And exactly. Way cheaper, way faster. It can follow the trends. And so it just shows the value. If you are a creative individual, if you are an artist, it really does seem like you would be hard pressed to be replaced if you are doing something far more unique and on a smaller scale. And I think that is the sort of thing that maybe we'll see some trends when it comes to, because the pendulum always swings too far, then it swings back. You know, there's these early days now of the AI where people are pretty amazed at what it can do. But then at some point you realize, well, there's an extent to what it could do, but then there's going to be perhaps a reaction going back the other way. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that'll be, but it'll be interesting to see.
There's definitely going to be a split in the next 10, 15, 20 years as AI becomes more pervasive, as we start to see more and more people use it and see more things like Udio pop up in the mainstream, where you're going to have people like you and I who we have a deep appreciation for the craft of writing, of the craft of art in general. We have that desire to support actual people making actual art through true and quote unquote proper means. And then you'll have a bunch of other people, especially companies, who are going to go with the cheapest route possible, as they always have done, and they're going to embrace AI entirely. This actually ties in with a conversation that David and I were having around the magazine. And for instance, the one author who submitted an article, as everybody knows with it, I want as many new voices as possible, as many up-and-coming individuals, people who may not be the best in terms of writing, or may not have English as their native language, but their photographs are strong, their ideas are novel, they have something to say, but they just need the help saying it. And something that David was playing around with was putting some of these articles that need the extra help into ChatGPT, and kind of having them go through the, having ChatGPT act as a copy editor, because the reality of the situation is that we're still small. And we can't necessarily keep having people who come on as copy editors be bogged down by having to more or less help the author rewrite this article into something that is usable and really is the best that is it could possibly be.
Yeah.
So he went through, put this into ChatGPT, and it actually came out quite nicely, where it kept everything that the author was originally saying, but it edited it in a way that is comprehensible, that is much, it flows a lot nicer, really. And it gets the point across in a much cleaner way. And David and I got into a conversation around this, because I'm not necessarily for using AI in any capacity when it comes to this kind of thing, or when it comes to photography. But I also understand the reality that the featured photographer that we'll be talking about was our previous copy editor. And really, really great individual, really great at her job, but it just became too much for someone who is essentially doing this as a favor, paid to do it, but still doing it.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Right, doing it after retirement, and it's a lot of work to be doing, especially when you have articles like these. And so David and I kind of came to the conclusion, but we're still talking about it, and we still have to figure out how reception will be, which is kind of why I bring it up now, to kind of get an idea of how our listeners would react to such an idea. But kind of trying to figure out, well, we have two pathways here. We can either accept articles that are maybe not the best written, and then have them go through our AI copy editor to help them along the way, and then go through a human copy editor that we have, so that you have AI that's doing 75% of the bulk of the labor, and then you have
probably the repetitive stuff that's just the grammatical and structural and stuff like that, which would just be laborious for a person to go through.
Exactly. And then having an actual copy editor finish through and polish everything up, while also having the original author step by step being taught or told everything that's going on and kept in the loop as usual. And that will allow us to bring in these extra voices, these new voices, that other magazines may not have the desire to work with because of the language barriers and such. Mm-hmm. Or we can go and be super selective about who the, only using the greatest writers, only using those who can really write well, but then we lose out on those new ideas. We end up with having a very repetitive catalog of writers for us.
Yeah.
And we run into other issues there too. So, like I said, it's an ongoing conversation, and obviously it depends greatly on the individual author, whether the AI copy editor is used kind of deal. But my biggest thing with him is, as we talked about it, was it needs to be, even if you are using this kind of stuff, even if it's for your own personal work and you're not trying to monetize it, if you're not trying to do anything big with it, in my opinion, it still needs to be very clear that it's used.
Yeah. Yeah, I see how that would be the case. I think in this, I mean, it's not too far-fetched from just having a very elaborate and very hands-on spell and grammar check.
That's what David was saying too, like having, essentially, yeah, it's not different from using Grammarly for these articles.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's using the same sort of logic for that. I think the main thing is the distinction that this is being used as an editor in a way, in the same way that if you have some AI powered tools, say in Photoshop, to handle some of the stuff that would be, one could do on their own, but it would be very difficult. It'd be very time consuming. I see it as a time saver, as opposed to something where, you know, write me an article from scratch. See, that's a whole different,
yeah,
sort of whole different thing. So I think in the context of it being an editor, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, it would be nice to have some sort of footnote saying that maybe that was used by, in the sense of being an editor, I don't even know that a footnote is as necessary. I think just so long as the original person who wrote it signs off on it saying, hey, this is still in my voice, this is still the intent that I was wanting to get, I think it would be okay. Because it's not like if you post something and you say like, oh, I had to use spell check on this. Because again, you've seen it as an editing tool as opposed to a creation tool.
Yeah.
And there's a distinction there.
What I brought up with David, and I've got to go through my... We've been texting so much recently that it's driving me crazy. Hold on. I got to figure out where I've set that. Essentially, Craig Mod put in something in his T-Bot, his latest book. And he put it in towards in the colophon because he used a bit of AI for his photographs. A little cleanup kind of thing, expanded composition or two. It's not like... And he made it very clear that he used it when he wrote in the colophon that he states, a sprinkling of AI was deployed on a few of the photographs in this book. It was used to remove a stray car, a lopsided cloud, a somewhat in the way ceiling lamp, a glaring streetlight, a hubcap, and a wee bit of bright metal in a bush. And I have no issue, like I said, with other people using it as long as it's stated outrightly. And I bring that Craig's statement up here because I think that's sort of real quick, short two sentences, three sentences, explaining how AI was used, explaining that it was used, is sort of necessary these days, especially when you're running a magazine or any kind of outward public production, publication, whatever. And so I think if we do decide to go forward with our AI copy editor, there's definitely going to be just a short paragraph in the very beginning of it underneath where we have our other copy editors and who all worked on the magazine, just kind of saying, hey, we used this technology because it's the reality of the world these days. It's helping our authors to better themselves and to better understand or better structure their work. It's not taking away any jobs because we're still hiring on copy editors. We're still working with real people for this. It's just helping them out, and we're using it as a tool to help them, help take away the stupid little jobs that are just tedious and unnecessary.
Yeah, and when you're talking about the footnote that Craig Mod put in there, it was interesting how the things that you had mentioned was all removing things from photos. Yeah. And there's definitely a distinction from removing things from a photo to adding things to a photo. And I was thinking about how does that pertain to writing? And I guess with the AI aspect, the AI editor, it probably will add some things in terms of trying to, maybe it's trying to clarify something. I'm sure a lot of it might be making it less wordy at mm-hmm. times and making it more clear, but maybe it adds some bridging statements or some other stuff along those lines that would, in a way, be a bit like adding something to a photo, where that at that point you start crossing a bit of a line. So I do see how if the AI editor for the articles does add things, I do see how that would be different than simply just distilling something down to a more concise way of saying something and making it more readable.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, and like we ultimately agreed on when it comes to this kind of deal, it's not going to be used in Access. It's only going to be used when absolutely necessary. And it's only going to be used as a tool to help aid the photographer, the writer, to get out the message in the best way possible. And it's really not going to be allowed to do anything more than what our regular copy editors would. It's just like using Photoshop. It's using a tool to help you better your work, to help make lives easier on everybody else, so that we don't have burnout within our little publication, so that we aren't running through copy editors and everything because we're putting too much work on them as individuals, and so that we can bring to life these different voices that otherwise wouldn't be heard, at least in the English speaking publications or even at all.
Yeah.
So like I said, it's all just in the works, little behind the scenes of NPN and the magazine, and just constantly thinking about how we can better ourselves and better everything that we do. But that's the latest for in that regard, at least.
Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, I think it'll be a tool that allows you to use the more energy, that allows you to handle the more mundane things, and then tackle the things. Then you guys can tackle the things that a human is good for. So it won't be as stretched then. So this past week, it's been absolutely beautiful here in San Diego. I mean, it's not always beautiful. It's mostly beautiful, but it felt like early summer. I mean, we had temperatures in the 80s. It was nice. And so I decided to pull out the skates again and to go skating for the first time this year, which was good. And after we record today, I'm going to head over and do a little skating there. But I think today will be the day that I merge two things that I'm a big fan of. One is inline skating, and the other is spandex.
Oh no!
So
Ben, don't do it.
I think I'm gonna have to do the full spandex outfit, and I do say outfit while skating today. So
can I just say, I have never ever in my life been happier to not be on social media right now.
Oh yeah, there will be pictures. There will be pictures.
And I'm sure some of the people listening, I can almost guarantee it, some of them listening are going to screenshot it and send it my way. I just know it. I just know it.
It'll happen. Somehow there'll be a postcard sent to your house that you won't even know how they got your address, but there'll be a postcard.
All of a sudden, I mean, you have my address, so it wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden an 8x10 inch print of you in spandex comes shipped to my
house.
It'll
be a transparency, and there will be a loop sent along
Great.
Just to make sure.
Just so I can see all of the details.
Oh, yes. But I figured you would enjoy that. But
enjoy is a weird word to be using there.
But it's nice. I mean, we've just been in this pattern where it would rain most weekends, which was always a bit of a bummer because it's like, oh, it's the weekend. It's time to like relax in the hammock and enjoy the rain. So it's good that we finally broken free of that. I just was finishing up. Well, not finishing up. I've started work on the volume 4 of the Unpolished ebook, which is the handwritten journals paired with the views of the film on a light box. And every time I create that series, I find myself reevaluating my thoughts on the images. And it's happening again where I thought I liked, if I had multiple variations of the same photo with just different light, I thought I had made the best choice, but now I'm looking through it again. I'm like, I don't know. I think I might like this other one over here better. It shows how something as simple as going through those written journal entries, reading them again, and then laying them out alongside the pictures of the original film. It takes me back to when I was the experience of being in the field again. Mm-hmm. But now with the perspective of having taken the time to get to know the images, but now seeing a little bit of a different aspect to them. So I think tomorrow I'm going to go through and scan a couple sheets of film that that I haven't scanned yet, because I initially wrote them off in terms of this one's okay, but I like this other one better. But I think I'm going to go through and do that because, you know, maybe I didn't make the right choice just because for whatever reason, when I first saw them, I was drawn to one, but that perception does change. So just, I don't know how this could be implemented for maybe other people listening, but there's something about going back, revisiting that work, and especially in combination with the written entries that really has me changing my thoughts on things. So it'll be interesting to do that. But yeah, it's kind of a fun part of the process.
I mean, kind of in line with that, one of the many ebook ideas that I have that I think I finally, like we were saying before we start recording, I think I finally have a grasp on how I want to move forward with ebooks in my own sort of style, I guess is the best word to use there, mm-hmm. Where they're not so much as just doing free portfolio ebooks or doing the, I guess would be more traditional like tutorial or how-to sort of ebooks where you get this because you want a question answered, but more so blending together portfolio ebooks and a few essays. I'm thinking maybe like 30 photographs and 3 essays, and then selling them for like $10, something like that. Enough that it makes the efforts of writing the essays worthwhile, but not too much that it dissuades people from thinking of it as more than like a basic donation kind of deal. But as part of this, one of the first ones that I'm going to be working on and that I am working on is back last year when I went to Acadia for that week for my trip, it was the first time that I brought the Ricoh with on a long-term trip like that. And I took, I forget how many I said that I had taken or how many photographs there was, but I had taken quite a number of photographs with that camera, and some of them were duplicates or near duplicates of photographs I was taking with the 4x5, just to kind of ensure everything, compare them, see which, mm-hmm. just play around, experiment. And I'm glad that I did, because the film for that trip really just, for one reason or another, it just didn't work out that well. I don't know if it was development issue, if it was exposure issue, a combination of everything. It was just a mess. Yeah,
there's a lot of ways that things can happen. Yeah.
And so this first ebook that I'm working on is going to highlight those 30 or so photographs that I had taken with the Ricoh on this trip. And the articles that I want to include with it, because each of these ebooks will be thematic in a sense, especially with around the articles, all following a theme, and this one will be about mindset and shifting your mindset. And I want to talk mainly about that because of the fact that when I had taken those photographs with the Ricoh, mm-hmm. I didn't really think much of them. Like it was more so like, oh, these are just some quick shots that I popped off that I didn't find taking out the 4x5 to be worth it for these, but they're cool little moments, kind of documenting the trip more so. But then a couple weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago, I finally went through Lightroom and started looking through these photographs, and I started looking at them a little bit more seriously, especially because it was around the same time that I had picked up the Fuji and was going through that process, leaning towards digital. And I found that my mindset around everything really kind of shifted as I looked back through it. And I was like, wow, some of these are actually pretty decent. Like, these I could see going into my portfolio. Like, I'm not so poor of a photographer that my photographic skills with composition and lighting and understanding all of that stuff just disappear because I'm no longer using a big camera, which is always cool to see. But kind of all of this, needless to say, that, like you said, looking back at older photographs, it can be really refreshing to see how you have grown, even in as short of a period as a year or a few months, to see how your perceptions on different photographs, whether they're taken in this, in my case, in a different medium, or in your case, just you haven't looked at them in a while, you wrote them off too quickly, whatever the case is, but just giving them that time and letting yourself grow and then going back through. I mean, I think of William Neal's latest monograph that he is, I think, is it fully released or is he still having difficulty with printing with that?
I think he mailed out a first batch and then I think there was another shipment that came in that he was working on mailing out now too.
Because I know that I got an advanced copy from him for the magazine to review, but regardless with that, he looked back through how many decades, 40 years of photographs to put that together and to see. And I'm sure that he came away with a lot of photographs that, like you, he had originally written off and didn't think anything of and was like, why did I not release this earlier? Kind of thing.
Yeah. It's something that comes with time and with the perspective of it. There's this other kind of funny thing where if I'm going back through, let's say at this point I'm looking at the videos I made during the fall when I went on the trip to Zion. I'm looking back at that. I'm looking back at the initial the opening monologue I wrote for it and everything. And I'm looking at the video for it. I think back to it, and it's a strange feeling in a way where I think back to it, I'm like, man, back then when I did that, I didn't know all that much. I'm like, oh, I was so like, it's like this weird thing, but in reality, I'm no different now than I was then. But there's this thing of like, you look back at something a little while back and you just see it from a completely different perspective, even though I'm the same thought process I'm using now I did back then. It's a strange sort of feeling with that. But yeah, it doesn't take long for that perception to change and to view work in a different light. So it's definitely very good to go back and revisit things. And I don't know how people, especially when shooting digital, where photos have a way of just kind of disappearing into the background on the computer, into a folder that you don't really look at again, but almost as though you need to, you know, go through them full screen on the computer and flip through them every now and then. So they seem a bit more tangible as opposed to just like these tiny little thumbnails that you just completely write off and you don't even have any sort of excuse of looking at again. So maybe there's some way of doing
that.
And
that's why I do the little 8x10 prints, like shortly before.
Yeah, that's
shortly
true.
Before we got onto here, tangible. I just ran through 9 photographs that I had taken so far this year that I think would work pretty well from the Fuji and printed them off. And I'm like, okay, now they'll sit there and I'll just live with them for a little bit and see, do I actually like how these look and that kind of thing. But like you said too, a lot of that stuff gets lost. Like today I went out for another one of little walks. It was a shorter walk this time with Emmy, but still went out. And something that I'm kind of experimenting with a little bit is doing focus stacking. And I've never really been, I never really used to do focus stacking. It just wasn't something that I was super focused on. Get it? Focus.
Yeah, it's a very technical exercise in a way. Yeah.
And I threw them into Photoshop when I got back. I think I had like 15 or 16 files for the one image from today and put it into Photoshop, had it auto align and then auto stack or whatever. And I was still somehow missing like portions of the image that like, how am I don't know. I don't know how I'm missing it. I don't know if Photoshop's doing a terrible job. I sent the files over to David to have him run it through the Helicon focus stack software to see if it is Photoshop. But still, that's 15, 16 images that just are files that just disappear into my Lightroom that I'm like, all right, mark them as red and I always get rid of red view. So I'm like, okay. But yeah. Like you said, there's a lot of those that I just dismiss. And then because they're marked as red, and I have a little preset that has no red on it, so I don't see them anymore. So unless I deliberately go through those, they'll be lost in the ether forever. And until I decide one day maybe to look at them again. But
it's literally out of sight, out of mind. Yeah. They're just kind of gone. So do we have a artist for the week?
You know we do, Ben. I already sent it to you. You already know this.
It still hasn't loaded yet, though.
It still hasn't loaded yet?
Oh, is it? No, is it? No,
you got something?
I got one more picture. I see three.
Oh, okay. Well, three is better than none. Three is definitely better than none.
For people that are listening, they can play along because the website's very slow to load, so you might have the same experience. Oh, I got five.
Okay,
now.
Cool. Okay. Good. Good. We're going to be talking about it, and every so often, you're just going to go, oh, I got seven. I'm good. Hey, look, I can see more. I'll have to talk to Mary about that because that's ridiculous. Regardless, our featured photographer this week is Mary Brisson of Mancos, Colorado. She was our copy editor for the first, the second, the third, and the fourth issues of Nature Vision magazine. She had gone on a couple different workshops and everything with David. That's how he got to know her. And obviously, I got to know her through working with her. And she is such a sweet, just genuine individual. Really lovely to talk to. I always love that so much more than any sort of you run into those people that are like really great photographers or really great writers, and then you reach out to them and they're just like the worst of people.
Yeah.
And it's just unfortunate. But Mary's great. And she recently sent me over, we were talking about prints because she did a small little exhibition, a group exhibition. I think that was local to her that she had done once prior. And so we got talking about prints and I finally saw her website. And like you said, it's running on Zenfolio and I'm not familiar with them all that much, but from this experience, it's not the fastest of loading.
It's a little slow to load. I mean, I don't have the fastest computer in the world, but I do have some little spinning circular thingies.
Yeah. But I think that's, I don't know if that's more to do with the file sizes that she's uploading or the Zenfolio as a whole or a combination, but
it's got to be a server thing, I would imagine.
But regardless of that, I really do enjoy some of the work that she's been putting out. In particular, she has a gallery from New Mexico, and this is the photograph titled Curtains. It's an oak tree or a cottonwood tree, a side of a door, more of like a human element kind of style, a mix of nature and humanity. And it's just a really beautiful piece that I'm actually waiting for her to get a test print done with her printer of choice. And then I'm going to be buying it an 8x10 from her or equivocal.
Oh, very cool.
Because it's just a very nice photograph. The lighting on it is very, very even, but it just, I don't know. There's just something about this one that compositionally, everything just seems to work for me with it. And she's got a few others in this series that she has.
Do you know if she has a background in doing black and white work, like early on or anything like that? Because the reason I say that is that a lot of the subjects and compositions that she has, I mean, the vast majority of the work's in color, but a lot of the subjects and compositions, it seems like it's from the viewpoint of a person who has a background in black and white because of there's a lot of shapes and lines and just everything is, I mean, it's beautiful in color, but I think pretty much all the photos would also work very well in black and white, which is something that if it seems like a person shot color all their life, it doesn't necessarily go the other way in terms of, oh, this image could also work in black and white. Because it seems like you kind of develop this eye for that sort of contrast and shape and texture and line.
I wonder if that has to do with her working with Chuck Kimmerly. because I know that she has done, like we talked about last week with the mentorships and all of that. Mm-hmm. I know that she's done a few with him. I think she's done a few workshops with him, but that could, I could definitely see that playing part into it as well. Just being able to notice those things that the black and white photographers notice a little bit better or more obviously than what some color photographers, because you're not relying on color so much.
Like the Roadside Stories gallery, which has a picture of a chair with a shadow as the lead one. I mean, when I see that, I'm like, you know, this certainly works well in color, but it also works well in black and white. And all the other photos in that gallery, it seems like they also would be also very well suited for black and white. So it's just interesting to see images that work both for color and for black and white, because it's usually one or the other. So that's it, I would not be surprised if that was the reason for it in terms of the choice of subject and composition and such.
She also has, like you say about the Roadside Stories, even in her New Mexico gallery, pulling up the, in pretty much all of her photographs, it's not just a focus on nature. She is also doing a lot of focus on the interplay between man and nature, which I think is something that you see a lot more commonly with black and white photographers. And in particular, I'm going to keep referencing Chuck because he's been on my mind as I work through scheduling a mentorship thing with him too. But you see that a lot more with black and white photographers, where there's not so much of a heavy focus on nature or one subject. It's more of a focus on light and contrast and line than it is anything else.
Yeah, for sure.
So I definitely see that sort of influence in Mary's work here.
Yeah. Well, that's a excellent choice. And now that all the images have loaded and I can enjoy them, I'll say that if anyone is, because I'm sure you'll have the website in the show notes and stuff, give it a little time. If it's taking the time load, and go make yourself some tea, go make yourself some coffee, come back and it'll be waiting for you.
I actually, like I said, I'm going to message Mary about that and just see, because I don't know, like I said, I don't know if it's file size. I don't know if it's Zenfolio. I don't know if our servers are somehow simultaneously being terrible today. I don't know.
you never know.
It's a combination of everything, but she is definitely worth checking out. Like I said, great individual, solid photographer. I highly recommend it. So
cool. Excellent choice. I hope you enjoyed our creative banter. You can learn more about Cody's work by visiting his website, codyschultz.com. And you can find my work at benhorn.com. For further discussion, join us at patreon.com/creativebanter. It's a place where we can interact with you, the listener. And although we greatly appreciate those who contribute by joining a tier, discussions are open to everyone, whether you're a paying member or not. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you around next time.